Folks, it's time to evolve ideas. You know, evolution did not end with us growing thumbs. You do know that, right? Didn't end there. We're at the point now where we're going to have to evolve ideas. The reason the world's so fucked up is we're undergoing evolution. And the reason our institutions, our traditional religions are all crumbling is because they're no longer relevant. They're no longer relevant. So it's time for us to create a new philosophy and perhaps even a new religion, you see. And that's okay, because that's our right, because we are free children of God with minds who can imagine anything. And that's kind of our role. How do you evolve ideas? I'll give you an example right here. By the way, there are more dick jokes coming. Please relax. I know I'm starting to lose them a little bit here with this shit. I'm like digging a fucking hole right now. And another thing. Where the hell did Bill go? He dug himself right through the planet. I hear people heckling in Chinese right now. Why you don't do dick jokes? Do dick jokes. Win crowd back. No one wants to hear your philosophy. They want to hear dick joke. Wow, what a completely rational heckler. They paid to hear dick joke, not to hear you talk about the President Bush. Here's how you evolve an idea. I'll give you an example. Why is the drug czar of this country... Well, let's go back. Why do we have a drug czar in this country? A. B. Why is he a cop? Why isn't he a guy in recovery who's had an alcohol and or drug addiction and overcome it? And why doesn't he help people with the same problem with compassion rather than condemnation? Why do we put people who are on drugs in jail? They're sick. They're not criminals. Sick people don't get healed in jail. See, it makes no sense. And if we evolve the idea, you see, the planet might be more compassionate and something like heaven might dawn. I want everyone here to take the 5 dried grams I taped under your all chairs right now. Under your chairs. Check them out. Check them out. Under your chair. Let's go, man. The fucking UFOs are waiting in the 5th dimension. Let's go. We'll do it later. We'll do it as a closer. Oh, shit. Mushrooms grow naturally on the planet. They're against the law. Marijuana grows naturally on the planet. It's against the law. Do you think making nature against the law seems a bit, I don't know, unnatural?
It necessitates a kind of hyper reality that, like, you're not striving for realism, you know, you're just, there's just, yeah, that's all I really.
Go yeah, ahead. It's like us. We got the B radio show.
Exactly.
And whatever. You know, like, I have a request for you, Alex, and for Mark. If you'd be willing, I don't know how you feel about this kind of thing, but Full Circle, The Haunting of Julia from 1977. That movie is another movie that's completely thrown me for a loop. Total, like, C movie. With, you know, Cure Delay and Mia Farrow. And I have this whole crazy thing with it with John Lennon. I play it with Double Fantasy and Milk and Honey. And, you know, it's just, but beyond that, just the film in the first fucking place, dude, it's one of those. It's right in the same echelon as, the Visitor, you know, creepy as hell. I'm putting it out there to you that it's a major request, and I would love, if possible, to join you guys, but that doesn't have to happen. But I would make the request that if you watch it and then you watch it, the Synchronicity, just, you know, if you could, that would be greatly appreciated, because it's totally perplexed me. I almost feel like I'm watching like a special kind of like gift for Sean Lennon, you know? I mean, it doesn't feel like it's for me. Like, I have this weird tripped out thing, I have to admit, where I feel like I stumbled on some like crazy shit that's ultra witchy, but that it's not like intended for myself. It's like for someone else.
You said Full Circle?
Yeah, Full Circle. Julie? Yeah, it had both titles. And there's crazy shit with it. Like, it came out on, 9/11, 1977 in Spain, and then proceeded to do a circle around the world, coming out in different places, and then ending in the U.S. on 9/11, 1981, I think, or maybe 1980, I forget. But there's this number of years where the movie circulated around the world, and then it went from 9/11 to 9/11. And yeah, that movie's a total rabbit hole.
Well, it's great because, I think it was Guillaume or somebody on Facebook. I made a little request of maybe doing movies from 1977.
Yes. Sort of similar great to recommendation.
That would be cool. I'll take a look at that. I don't have the internet at my house anymore. I tried to I've been trying to divorce myself from it a little bit. Just because I've been addicted to it my whole life basically. And, trying to just as a time sink, but so I don't get to watch as many long videos as I used to. But what I've seen of all your sinks, I've really loved, particularly the Poltergeist, E.T.
Oh, you watched it with Gremlins too.
No, I didn't watch all of it. I started it. I don't think I got to Gremlins yet, but.
Okay. Well, I mean, I didn't include Gremlins on my video that I uploaded.
Oh, you did. Okay. I see. Well, yeah. I've been the ICT connection. I don't know. I mean, I just marvel at that. I mean, it's just an incredible, just like the overlaying of like the, I think it was like the moon or the some with the girl's face. And, it's just haunting, really. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
and it speaks to this idea of like an emanation of some kind of intelligence, and those two movies being so linked with, basically being the same movie, as you've said, I think.
Yeah, they came from the same screenplay in which the beings are said, I think, three times to come from Sirius. And the kid in the screenplay is like, oh, they came from the dog star. And I was on this whole trip about the fact that the dogs in the movies are paralleling each other. The golden retriever. And, there's this whole thing, like, you're talking about, like, I know what you're referring to. You're talking about when the portal of the ship opens at the beginning of E.T. and the way it aligns with Carol Ann's eye.
Yeah, that's it.
And, there's this whole, thing with the dog running up the stairs with the ship, right? So you have the ship there, the dog at the beginning of Poltergeist running up the stairs. And then if you watch E.T., you know, at the end, the golden retriever, like, runs up the entryway to the ship, like it's gonna go, it wants to go on the ship, and then it turns back around, and it's like, dude, the dog in the overlay at the beginning of Poltergeist keeps on looking like he's trying to get in the ship in E.T., and it looks like the exact same dog. And you'll notice things like where the dog in the photo in E.T. is on his hinds, you know, it's like it's sitting on a table, and then they pan over, and then you see the dog laying in the bed, and he jumps out of it. But then you'll see in Poltergeist, when the Poltergeist enters the house, you know, afterwards, and the dog gets on the bed and does this thing on his hinds, and he's like putting his paws up in the exact same way. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it'd be one thing if these were just movies that seem to parallel each other in various ways, but it's like, no, these came from the same screenplay, and it's emphasized that the beans are from Sirius. Not only does it say Sirius, it's like the dog star, like just in case you missed it. You know, and so it's got huge Kabbalistic implications because, you know, Sirius is the middle pillar. You know, if you're into high weirdness enough, that when the towers fell, you know, 9/11, they had this whole giant ceremony for the dog Sirius that was the fire dog that died in the event, you know. It was like they basically made it a hero, but they're like, Sirius, you know, this all acknowledge Sirius now in relationship to the towers. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah.
And what occurs to me just now is also that you've probably heard of the Dogon tribe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just realized their dog.
Oh yeah, Dogon it, dude. Totally. Yeah. It's God backwards.
Yeah. Right.
It's just like if you say that the Chetzonim are tetragrammaton in reverse, you got Dog God. So it's like basically like it seems like they're implying that the the serious beings are basically the Klipo, which are referred to as the outside ones, but you could just as easily translate that as aliens. Alien, outside ones. Like, come on, you know? It's just, it's a total
right. Threat. But where does that outside, like, right in the beginning, we were talking about inside and outside. So, you know, I've been trying to work through that idea of the ET, and what is the ET? Is it really these inner, these planetary beings that can travel faster than light speed and get here over vast distances, and then they crash their ships and shit, and our black projects pick them up. It seems like, yeah, there's some hint of that, but a majority is always these surreal abduction, contact, you know, someone like Mike Cleland has these intersections between owls and aliens, really strange stuff that actually transcends all these stereotypes that we know about the alien experience. And one of my favorite books is Graham Hancock's Supernatural, where, I mean, that's the whole book. It's like he's noticing these intersections between shamanism, ETs, archetypes, what that means. Is it an inner experience or an outer? And then where's that intersection lie? And it's both, right? But it's like I'm seeing ET more and more as just an archetypal awakening experience that people are waking up in the night and being stolen away and having surgery done on them. Hello, you're a fucking shaman. You know, it's like,
well,
that's who you are.
Well, this is a different context. This is a totally different context, because in this context, when you're looking at ET and poltergeist, first of all, you know, that's the thing that's communicated in relationship to the Klipo is that they're here already and they're actually your perception of the world. So they're like a parasite that's literally like replicating the Tetragrammaton, which is the higher order, through your very vision. So when you're relating to material existence, there's a sheath between you and that. Mm-hmm. That's the joke of they're here. Because you'll notice that in Poltergeist, that's the thing, Carol Ann turns around when the poltergeist enters the house, the television set that says 237 at the moment it enters, you know, and she says, they're here. And then if you look at, like, Gremlins came from the same script just as E.T. did much later on, though E.T. and Poltergeist came out within a month of each other during the summer of Spielberg, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's a Tobe Hooper film. Steven Spielberg oversaw the whole production, and it came from his ideas to an extent. And so, I mean, E.T. was originally evil. You can even look at the imagery from Dark Skies, Night Skies, where, you know, you have E.T. and he's just like this evil, you know, entity or whatever. But, like, the original poster art that went out for Gremlins was a gremlin coming out of a box holding a red crayon that says, let's say, we're here. We're here. So Carol Ann says, they're here. He says, we're here. If the album that I actually play in that synchronicity over it, I actually play two albums and a song. I play, Mogwai's Mr. Beast, and then, which Mogwai's demon, mm-hmm. right? It's old deal. And then Mogwai's, The Hawk is Howling, followed by the song Stanley Kubrick, which, and then it ends at the exact same time if you do that. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that, you know, E.T. ends with Thus Spake Zarathustra, the drum roll, you know, admittedly, it's this nod to Stanley Kubrick in 2001, A Space Odyssey. But so that was the rationale for that. But what's interesting is that you look at the end of Mr. Beast, there's a song called We're No Here, which is very interesting because you're like, well, these people are obviously communicating a Spielberg film in the first place with their fucking name. Mogwai, you know, it's like, it's a demon that you gotta work with in the right way. You gotta be responsible when you're dealing with a demon. It's a whole basic thing in the grimoire, you know? But I found that really interesting. Like, that was my rationale for the whole deal. I'm like, in Poltergeist, they say to her, it's just another child, but to us, it is the Beast. And so I'm like, well, Mr. Beast is the name of the album. The song at the end is We're No Here. I mean, seems pretty straightforward. It's just very interesting that the timing worked out in the way that it did and it achieves the effects that it achieves. Now, in terms of intentionality, I'm not necessarily going there, but I would say that the film, definitely seems to be communicating some weird intelligence. And that's been my experience with it. I don't know what other people take from that shit, but on a personal level, I've definitely, gone there.
Right.
It seems like.
Well, I mean, like, let me make a quick distinction. I don't disagree with you at all, but, these extra dimensional beings that, yes, okay, we live in a physical space and there's all these different densities of existence above and below us. So on that level, I accept that, yeah, there's other things floating around in the ether with us that we can't see, feel, and, you know, we're the classic Flatlander scenario where stuff bleeds through, but we only see a strange geometric shadow of it. It's not what's really there, but we can feel it. And so this idea of like energetic parasites and archons and this kind of something you hear talked about quite a bit, you don't necessarily have to link them with archons, but just again, this whole other level of, I guess, quote unquote, physical experience, only it's at a different density. But then you can't just say, oh, it's just that, or there might be an objective world, but sometimes it seems like you have to go deeply subjective to get there. So a shaman will go into a trance state and can bring back visions of DNA, right? But you have to enter an extremely subjective state to come back with a quote unquote objective, I guess, information. So it's like there's right. it's never a clear cut distinction. Do you see my problem?
Right. Well, it's funny. Yeah, I see it. And I'd say it's also kind of ironic that you'd say that in the way that you said it, being that, you know, what was his name? It's escaping me, but the Indian from Poltergeist 2, you know, the thing where they don't admit that they used real skeletons in the original Poltergeist, mm-hmm. in the swimming pool and in the caskets and all that, even though it's been claimed, you know, various sources, it's still a debatable point, but it's not debatable with Poltergeist 2. They used real skeletons, in the first scene of that, one of the first scenes in that film when they go below the house. And people kept on getting injured, and this is from the cast. I mean, this is an admitted thing that the Indian of the film, he performed a shamanic ceremony to heal the space, and he insisted that the bodies be buried properly and that they continue onward after this was done. He was like, "Everybody, stop everything! We have to do this," because he's a shaman in real life. And so this is the thing with that film. All these deaths, everybody dies. The older sister in the first one is strangled to death by her boyfriend right after the film comes out. With the second one, you have, you know, the preacher dies in real life, you know, the Indian dies in real life. When the third one comes out, you have Carol Ann dies. Carol Ann happens to get sick during, I know you guys probably know this, but it's fucking insane and worth mentioning that, you know, if you watch the first film, above the children's bed, there's a poster that says Super Bowl 1988. Well, this movie's filmed in what, 1980, right? So what the fuck? Why is it 1988? That Super Bowl hasn't happened yet. Isn't that odd? Like, did they make a special poster for a Super Bowl? Why would you have a Super Bowl poster that it hasn't happened yet? It's odd. She got sick during that game when it happened in real life, which was in her hometown. Her home city, what was it? It was it San Diego, I believe? And San Diego versus Colorado, which is odd because of all the correlations between Colorado Overlook, you know, and this film. I mean, the whole basis for the films are the same. You know, you got the Overlook is built on an Indian burial site. And then, like, you know, when he's walking him along in Poltergeist, he says, "Relax, it's not ancient Indian burial ground we're talking about here. It's just, you know, it's like, but it's the same premise that you have. You build a spot on a burial ground, and then you have this result. And it seems to be metaphorical of that we built this whole fucking country on blood, and then we're repressing the reality of what we actually did to a degree. We have amnesia, you know, generationally, because we're not in touch with the reality of what we emerged from, you know, because people keep coming out of people. It's crazy. But yeah, no, I thought that was like, I thought that was really fucking weird that she would get sick and die in relationship to this game. Even if you look at the scores of the game, I only know this because of Subliminal Synchrosphere, and, I couldn't believe it. And it's things like this with him that I have total, sympathy for his situation when he goes into the conspiratorial realm. How the fuck could that happen? How could you put a Super Bowl poster above the bed for a Super Bowl that hasn't happened, and then she gets sick during the game? I mean, she was sick beforehand. She had this whole issue, but I mean, that's when she died, was when it just really, you know.
Yeah, let me put forward a theory here. And it's only part of the story, and it can't be the whole thing. But I mean, the fact that this shamanic person detected like a toxicity in space-time, I guess that's the only way you can put it. So I put a lot of stock in the idea that humans are basically transducers, and that our life force is generated by a certain flow and geometry and all these things commingling. So you throw a bunch of humans into a toxic environment, you know, physically speaking, you get sick and die. You throw them into a toxic spiritual environment. It's the same kind of shit. So these places are rare, I'd say. But again, something like, say, Amityville Horror, where this guy seems to all of a sudden get taken over and possessed and kills everybody, or this kind of shit that happens randomly and we have no explanation for it, except to say that they're nothing. You shouldn't pay attention to them. They're weird stories that are fun, but they don't tell you anything about reality. But in fact, they're telling you so much about what reality really is below the surface. So, you know, I that's like goes back to Bohm's implicate order and like this huge non-local field that connects everything. And there's a whole texture and reality and dynamic to that that we don't even understand, but that for so long, spiritual traditions have seemed to be able to elucidate in their own ways. So Kabbalah can model the dynamics of space-time as the tree, and the path through our inner consciousness is the tree. And then you have something like the I Ching, you know, through the hexagram model, and it's all self-development. It's just the same shit, but it's also drawing on, again, this idea of the all and the cue. And yeah, and so, you know, Alex, I asked you about, you know, why did you pair those? And, you know, I for my show, Pentimental with Thomas, I try to get two guests that I can put together and they kind of resonate or, you know, some kind of reason. So in my own little ritual, that's kind of what I do. And I don't necessarily always know what the result's going to be. I see what I do as a kind of like a fool's magic. It's based largely on intuition and not a systematic Crowley type approach to magic. You know, I think, and David too, it's like, I think we all kind of practice that. And David, you're probably more refined in that you've been doing this so long, but still, it's like, I can look at what you're doing, but I can't do what you're doing. It's like you do it off feel. It's like you're the kind of poker player that is just doing everything by gut. And it's just, everyone looks, it's like, how does he do that? And in the same way, it's like, I don't, methodology versus kind of just like accidental manifestation. That's something else I've been thinking about too. And yeah, I just see myself as kind of a fool. I don't see myself as being able to control this shit, and no one can control it, but it's like there's degrees to everything.
I hear you on that. I was kind of thinking about that recently too, in a way. I mean, there's one guy on the internet that I've liked for a long time, and his website is Montauk.net, and he writes a lot about aliens, just all the weird shit. And he's pretty far off the deep end, you might say, but he's very sane. And one of the things, he has a Q&A and somebody emailed him and then said, what do you think about Aleister Crowley and what he was doing? And he kind of said that, he equated ritual magic with, basically with like hacking reality, and that it's not not like the truest method of getting there in a way. And I kind of resonate with that. I feel like there's a certain amount of, ego involved in that kind of like systematic ritual. And then I've never done anything like that. I don't really want to. To me, synchronicity and magic has as much to do with paying strict attention to what's going on around you more than it has to do with just like doing anything. I mean, sorry, I just kind of lost my train of thought, but yeah, it's just paying attention to, because synchronicity is happening at every single moment that you're breathing air. I mean, being alive in itself is synchronicity. And so I feel like there's a certain amount of letting go that needs to happen. And like, yeah, one of my favorite writers is David Milch, who is actually a TV writer. He wrote the show Deadwood and NYPD Blue and other things. And he likes to say that, he sees himself more as a vessel than as a person or an ego or whatever. And so a lot of his artistic process is just getting out of the way to let whatever it is come through him, which is almost like akin to channeling. And the way he writes is literally like that. It's like he lies on his back with a screen in front of him, and he has assistants and he dictates and they type it out so that he doesn't actually touch the keyboard or anything, and he can kind of get it outside of his body to allow the stuff to come through. And I just kind of take that as like a model for like how to live, really. I mean, just not. Yeah, I think that's the end of my point.
No, it's.
It's a good point.
It's relaxing the idea that, yeah, you have complete control, that we have this linear progression to our lives, that you do A and then you do B and you'll get C. But that's not the way it works at all. And not only that, but it seems like, what is it? People always make plans, but they just never work out the way you anticipate. So we spend our lives making plans only to have them violated.
Great line, actually. Just real quick, the great line from David Milch in Deadwood is, and probably, I don't even know if it's his line, but, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans. So.
Right. Classic.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was searching for. But same principle, and that's kind of the way I approach this stuff too. It's like, you know, I could go out of my way to, I guess, learn all the particulars about which way I should be facing when I say a certain word out loud at a certain volume. You know, it's like if some of this stuff gets really technical to the point where I have to think, you know, that might have worked for you, but I don't think you really know why it works either. And I don't think the universe really is listening to quite how loud your voice is or if you're facing left or right. And there's something to that, right? But so much of it more is about what you brought into that ritual to begin with. What was your intent, you know, and what was your, yeah, Alex, you were saying, like, what was your awareness of the larger construct around you? If you had no awareness of that, it doesn't fucking matter. You can bring all the bells and whistles into this shit you want to. It's not going to matter if you don't have that awareness.
You want to plan for the best and hope for the worst. Mm-hmm. As the old saying goes. I was you know, strike that, reverse.
but yeah, no, I mean, so I guess like, yeah, and seeing Sync in that kind of perspective, it's like Sync is just so, someone posted on Facebook, it's like, oh, maybe, Sync, the government learned how to control it and is using a machine or something. I'm like, Sync is the most uncontrollable thing on planet Earth. It's like, it's ultimate, totally. It's that's the ultimate fair. Serendipitous force. It is a fifth force. So beyond human control, it's laughable to suggest such a thing, I thought, but not to hate on that person or anything. It's just, this is where our minds go as people that have been, I guess, steeped in conspiracy for so long that we think someone could control synchronicity and use it against us.
Speaking of that, I kind of wanted to say you were talking about aliens and alien abduction and stuff and these horrible experiences people have. And I am a conspiracy theorist at heart, and I am very interested in just the machinations of the power elite or whatever you want to call them. And I don't think you can discount the idea that a lot, if not the majority, of alien abduction experiences are some form of, black op, mind control kind of things. It may put me out on a limb, which is funny because I think that's not really a new idea. It's something that people have been putting forth for a long time, and yet it's still kind of controversial. And to me, it's almost obvious, I just don't really buy the idea that there are, I think probably Robert Anton Wilson or a lot of people said this, that just like the idea that ET would come down here to inspect our anal cavities, like, just, I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me. It seems like something human.
No, it's a Protestant thing, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm having this thought here and I want to voice it. And I haven't seen Q in so long. But I remember this whole like ending sequence with like the top of a skyscraper or something. Is that the deal? Okay. So what the fuck? Okay. So I didn't listen to the Q episode you guys did. You did with Mark. But I'm thinking about the fact that you mentioned Kuf, the Hebrew letter, which corresponds to the moon in tarot. And it's funny because I was going on this whole serious rant, right? But then I'm thinking about the fact that I've mentioned before, you know, that the moon card in tarot pictures Anubis on both sides of the, they've got the two towers, right? And the two towers also occur in like the rider deck, in the, death card, right? Which is originally not named death in the Marseille tarot is the only unnamed card in the deck, of the major arcana. But I find that really interesting that you have this serious thing. And even in the rider deck, when you look at the moon card and you have the two towers, you have a dog on one side, a wolf on the other. So you have like the tamed or domesticated dog. And then, you know, you have the, wild and free dog, on both sides of these towers. But, isn't it interesting in regards to, I'm like having these memories of the film Q, and I'm like, well, this has this whole climax at the tip. It's very King Kong-esque, if I recall correctly. Like, and you know, King Kong, the 1111, you know, he's climbing the Empire State Building. Malkuth literally translates as empire. You're literally, and Malkuth is the tip of the genitals, and you have a giant building that comes across as a obelisk or phallus, you know, and then it's like the King Kong dies at its tip, which I find very interesting. Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, that's kind of interesting. Like, I never thought about the Q Kuf connection before. I mean,
I have some thoughts, not necessarily about the Q Kuf. I mean, that was more Mark's thing because he's far more well versed in the Hebrew alphabet than I am. We definitely talked a lot about Larry Cohen specifically said that he wanted to do for the Chrysler Building in New York what King Kong did for the Empire State Building. And it's very much a King Kong-esque thing. And the very first shot of the film is actually, of a window washer outside of the Empire State Building who gets his head cut off.
Right. So you have the King Kill connection in the first place.
Yeah.
King Kong dies at the tip, and then you're equating that with Q. But what's interesting is that I don't know if Mark mentioned this. I mean, I'm sure he probably did. But you have the relationship between Raish and Kuf. Raish corresponds to the sun. Kuf corresponds to the moon. But Raish literally represents the medial front of the head, which is the pituitary. The pineal, which is why the moon, because it's activated in dream states, right? Kuf is the pineal gland. This is very interesting in regards to Quetzalcoatl. That's sinky as fuck.
I think Mark did mention that. Is it the back of the head or is it the front of the head?
Raish is the front of the head, Kuf is the back of the head, but this is a little misleading because you have to know that, you know, this is the way that this is related. I mean, Keter is referred to, in the text that I look at from the late 15th, early 16th century, is literally described as the middle brain. And they emphasize that point. It's the medial brain. Now, what are you talking about when you say that? There's only two glands that reside in the direct center, and that's the pituitary and the pineal. From what I know, I mean, I'm no expert on the matter, but, you know, from the places I've looked at, that it would make sense. It makes a lot of sense because you're looking at the reflection of the sun as the moon. You're looking at, you know, the reflection in the mind in terms of what's being created in the dream realm. I mean, you're re-representing it, and that's the activation of the pineal gland is directly corresponds to the image making faculty in the mind. And so that's really interesting. I mean, I'm having come into mind. I don't know if you ever saw that Star Trek cartoon about Quetzalcoatl, where he basically talks about the origins of civilization and how it's just basically this one world, religion kind of, do you know what I'm talking about? You ever seen
No,
that?
But
I've never seen it. I know about that cartoon, but I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe we should fucking put that in the show notes because that is trippy as fuck. Although, yeah, I think I can find it again. Yeah, I'll try and find it. Yeah.
And then that's funny that Q. Okay, so that's a Star Trek cartoon, you said?
Okay. Yeah.
Did that.
Well, isn't the Q, like, isn't that a Star Trek character?
Yeah, I was just going to say Q is the judge. Q is that, he represents the race of quintessens that, you know, judge humans and get involved in human affairs.
Are you fucking serious?
What do you mean?
I don't know Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a Misty Greer thing. She talks about that a bit, so.
oh, we got a sink on our hands. That's a
yeah,
good one.
No, totally. And so you have the quintessence who are coming in as the judge, and they're getting involved with human affairs because there's this, I mean, it seems to insinuate that people can, you know, evolve to these higher bodies or whatever, this higher transcendent state of consciousness or whatever existence, who knows. But
there's yeah. also, oh, well, it kind of made me think they're in the, this is silly, but the Justice League, DC comic.
Sure.
There's the question.
For a friend.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but okay.
Well, when Superman died, that was the big thing with Justice League, right?
Oh, I
they
see.
Did
well,
this,
I'm only
you know, for a friend series. Love Lies Bleeding in My Hands, a reference to the Towers with fucking, Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. You don't know what I'm talking about. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I don't know the comics, but I come through it through the cartoon that was on, Cartoon Network, which is great. But there's the character, The Question, who is like the conspiracy theorist. He's like, he wears a mask that has no, he has this blank face, and he's like,
I know The Question.
Yeah, just another cue, that associated with all this, like tying things together and all the links between. I just thought that was appropriate to throw in there.
Totally.
Yeah.
But in Q, the movie, as Mark pointed out several times, the hero or whatever, Michael Moriarty's character, Jimmy Quinn, there's a scene with him and Richard Roundtree, who's the cop interrogating him, and he's like, you know, kind of bullying him like a cop does, and he puts his hand on the back of his head and just kind of like leaves it there.
Oh my God. You're tripping me out right now.
It just seems like, yeah, it's all in there. It's like, this is the conclusion we came to on the show. It's just like, there's just so much going on here.
Dude. So Superman is killed by Doomsday way back when there was the fucking bloody Superman cover. This is like super.
Oh yeah.
Relatable. And this is a giant rabbit hole. Because Superman is the Uber mesh. You know, the first Superman comic is him throwing the, you know, the 666 bug, right? He's throwing the sun, you know, Action Comics. But you know, and then the Superman theme song, as pointed out by Patrick Svek, is the same notes as Suspect Zarathustra in 2001 A Space Odyssey. And the whole premise of 2001 is around the Uber mesh. Even if you look at like Superman 2, it centers around this thing that's like the monolith that's basically imprisoning people, and there's this whole deal. But yeah, Justice League came out with Funeral for a Friend. Now I came out with this total mindfuck synchronicity of The Wiz, the first ever Motown produced movie, and Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And it blows my mind all the way through. But there's a point in the middle when they go to the Emerald City at the two towers, and they encircle the sphere, which was representative of the Kabbalah.
I'm losing my connection.
Can you hear me now?
I might have to hang up and reconnect.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, okay, I'm back.
Okay, so yeah, I had this whole trip out. So, if you play Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road with the film The Wiz, and you start it at the beginning of the film, pretty straightforward. I have it up on my channel as Tell Me Great Seal, which was in the album. It says Gray Seal, but he's obviously talking about the Great Seal, you know, which is money. You know, it's the Gray Seal of the fucking, you know, the pyramid with the eye. But if you play that album with that film in the middle of it, when they go to the Emerald City and they're at the two towers, they have these people that are encircling the sphere between the towers, which is representative of the Kaaba at Mecca. And so you have these, you know, this whole ritual taking place, and it's very overt, and it's very fucking weird that this is in this movie at all, and the way that it's in this movie. It's such a ritualistic scene. Well, the way it lands, if you start the album at the beginning, and then the second time the album comes through, the first song in the album is Funeral for a Friend, Love Lies Bleeding in My Hands. But if you listen closely to the lyrics of the song, it's literally talking about a house. And if you know the tower card, you know it was originally called the House of God, which is a reference to the temple, which gets destroyed every 2,000 years. So, this is in the Zohar. And I've talked about it many times on this show, because it's an example of something that I was told that I was extremely skeptical about. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. it took me the longest time to find an actual reference in someone, instead of one whistleblower, Leo Zagami, saying, oh yeah, 9/11, that's in the Zohar. And I'm like, oh really now? You know, the date? Give me a break, right? I mean, there's such a thing, it's something that fundamentalists love to say, is like, quote a Bible verse that has the date of fucking doomsday, right? And so I find the reference, I look it up, sure enough, it says the 25th of Elul, which in the Hebrew calendar, you know, if you're relating it to the Gregorian calendar, becomes, you know, September 15th. But then I continue looking, I find that in the 18th century, there was a rabbi who made an adjustment to the text and actually said it's a few days off, which becomes September 11th, if you're looking at it at the millennium. So you have the equivalent of the temple gets destroyed, 2000 years from the destruction of the last one. It gives a specific date, which happens to be September 11th. It's three structures, three strongholds will be destroyed, thus ushering in the world that is to come and the coming of the Messiah and all of this stuff. And so when you're watching The Wiz, when they go to the two towers, and you know, when Diana Ross first enters Oz, she fucking goes through the O and the Z, which is the Crowley O and Z, you know, Oz, but, you know, value, 77, strength card, lust. We could go into the whole thing with the horror of Babylon and the beast and all of this. But that aside, Joaquin and Boaz, they go to Joaquin and Boaz in this movie and they do this whole ritual there. Now, it just so happens that when that lands, you're listening to, you know, everything about this house was born to grow and die. You know, it's like this song about a house, you know, for a friend, you know, love lies bleeding in my hands. You know, Superman dies. It was a big deal when I was growing up. You know, it was like I thought it was the end of the Superman comics. But what do you know? He got resurrected and they turned Superman into Jesus, right?
Oh, but, how naive.
But it was fucking Justice League came out with Funeral for a Friend. And Justice League mourned the death of Superman, who was killed by Doomsday. And like, it was like this really weird fucking thing where it's like, what are they doing? It felt at the time in my childhood very ritualistic, the way that they sacrifice Superman and resurrect him.
And it goes deeper than that, because Doomsday, when he first crashes into Earth, he's in a green suit. Okay, so here's this cosmic green man coming to confront the Superman, and through their interaction transforms the Superman through a death or an ego death, and he becomes resurrected again. And also, as their battle goes on, Doomsday is revealed to be kind of a gray. his costume gets ripped off and he's a gray skin.
Yeah.
He's a gray alien. So you have this green man gray confrontation with that inner archetype. And then, funny enough, not too long ago, I just, on a lark, I looked this up. I'm like, oh, what does Spawn and Green, how do they link? Do they link? And of course they do, because Spawn faces almost a similar confrontation with a monster called the Pile, which is funny because we're talking about like trash in the treasure so much, or treasure in the trash. And so really what this is a confrontation with that principle along with the Green Man principle. So this green pile of trash comes, fights Spawn.
Pile of Full Metal Jacket.
Right, right. Yeah.
I am in a world of shit.
However you want to like contemplate that or frame it, it's the same thing being said in different words. But he confronts this thing, and through his conflict with it, he comes out with new powers. These powers of the quote unquote green realm that gives him heightened awareness. Just new powers, however you want to think of that. So, I mean, I just think of that in the human experience as awareness and acknowledgement of magic, however you want to think about that, etc. But, you know, those two things line up pretty damn closely for my tastes. And, you just, even in fucking comics, man, it really is our modern myth. And so people that point that out, like, who does that the most? Probably like Jeff Kripal or Christopher Knowles, or people that play with the, you know, these guys are definitely onto something. It's just like, it's all there. Very cool.
Wherever you look, it seems. Like, I've been rereading the Lord of the Rings lately, and hell is all in there. I mean, I was just thinking, I'm in the middle of the Two Towers right now, and so I was just trying to, like, and I noticed recently, like, there's a scene, I mean, this is so typically kind of whatever, but the scene when they're defending the Helm's Deep or whatever, and Gimli and Legolas are competing to who can kill more orcs, and Gimli ends up killing 42, and he's like, 42, and Legolas is like, oh, I beat you by one, or no, you beat me by one, and it, And I just saw that and I was like, well, yeah, of course. It's just, at this point, I see those kinds of things and I'm just like, yeah, well, of course. I'd be more surprised if it wasn't 42. Like,
you know, it's fun discovering, like, actually, again, like, so much of this is unintentional, but of course there's intention. Of course, Tolkien was, you know, a much more than just this Christian dude, same as C.S. Lewis. It's like, they were into the mystical, mystery school aspect of whatever their mainstream, you know, mask was. I mean, this journey to Middle Earth and, God, it's just so obvious when you actually break it down. And
dude, I'm sorry. I just want to jump in really quick because you said I'm getting an echo. Mm-hmm. I'm getting echoes or whatever. And I couldn't help it, dude. I'm thinking immediately. I'm like, Pink Floyd echoes, goes in sync with Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, 42. Yeah. As it's working.
No. No, of course. Of
course. Yep.
Wow, that was a weird echo just then when I did my fucking hyena laugh. It like, I could hear my own laugh extending. It tripped me out. Anyways.
I'm laughing a lot, but my mute button is on, just to let you know. I don't have a sense of humor. Anyway.
So I probably have like another 10 minutes or so. If you guys want to keep going, that's cool, but that's about how long I want to stay on for. So it's almost 3 o'clock.
No, I think 10 minutes sounds good. If I want to talk to you more. I really enjoy talking to you. So. At some point in the future, you could jump on if you'd like.
I like it. I very much enjoyed this. I figured it out. I didn't want to do this in that cafe. I'm really happy here in my car all alone. So that's good.
Cool. Yeah, it's better I mean, it's kind of weird to talk on your phone, like in this context, but you know, it's funny. You're like Alex and I was just visualizing at the beginning of this conversation. The fact that I'm talking about Kubrick died 666 days before January 1st, 2001. But then what I'm not mentioning is that in A Clockwork Orange, which seems to be a reference to the sun in the first place, even with Anthony Burgess, whatever. Tony, who's Tony? It's funny that, Alex is a 666 because the only point in that movie when they show you the sun, when you see the sun in A Clockwork Orange, you know, is when the cops are carrying him to the water basin. You know, they beat him down as two droogs. And you got one cop on one side with his badge says 667. You got the other cop on the other side and his badge says 665, implying that Alex is 666. And here we are talking to Alex and the first thing you bring up is 1666, Mr. Newton with the apple corresponding to Eden. It's just worth mentioning,
well,
I guess.
Here's another thing about the name Alex, in traditional, in English gematria, so you know, A is 1, Z is 26. The name Alex is 42.
Oh, interesting. So you got, Oh, where was I gonna fucking go with that? Oh yeah, Alexander Pope. Pope Alexander. Fucking Kirsten Dunst, can't remember which one. In Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You follow that? if you can read this, you're a Pope.
I've got my Pope card. We're all now popes.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only pope.
Oh, damn. I finally got to watch Jodorowsky's Dune, but at the same time, it didn't have any subtitles, so I missed like fucking 40% of the dialogue because it's in French and Spanish. So I could garner things from their body language and stuff and certain keywords, but you kind of had to go on faith as to what they were saying. And you just brought up the Obi-Wan thing, and it's like, oh, yeah, George Lucas took that from this battle scene that was in Dune.
Yeah, it must have been funny when you watched H.R. Giger on that.
Yeah, oh my god, dude, it was just...
Because that's funny in the first place.
Yeah, he's
place,
just like
too.
This laboring Swedish guy that like is creepy as hell.
Was he Swedish? Was he Svensk? I thought he was like Danish or something.
It's whatever, it's one of those... It's one of those Nordic places. I think it's Swiss, actually.
I think he is actually
yes,
Swiss.
Yes, that's it. But see, I really enjoyed the movie, and I do want to see it with the subtitles so badly. And god, it's just like Jodorowsky... The one little anecdote that I loved was he got this guy, Dan O'Bannon, to do his cinematography. And the way he convinced him was he went to the visit and Dan O'Bannon's like, oh, I expected this fucking crazy guy to meet me. But, you know, he's dressed to the nines in this suit, impeccable looking. And he hands me this little envelope of newspaper and he says, oh, that's very special marijuana. So you're going to smoke this, right? He's like, okay. So he smokes it. And they're talking about the movie and all of a sudden Jodorowsky just like snaps his finger and does, he says some kind of like magic word. Like it's not abracadabra, but he says something goofy as fuck, but it initiates this like transcendental moment in this person. And Jodorowsky almost knows. He's like, he's saying Jodorowsky like was looking into my eyes and like it was pulling all kind of witchcraft on him and shit. And you know, he didn't get everyone by doing that, but it's just like it, the way he was able to convince people to get on board with his projects was incredible. Like just his, yeah, I don't know. I walked away more impressed with him than ever. You know, it's like you can have an appreciation for someone's art, sure. But here we're talking about Kubrick. We're like, I don't really like Kubrick. But then someone like Jodorowsky is like, I fucking like that guy. He's just a cool guy and clearly is like, has powers. I don't know how else to put it, you know, like talking about magic and stuff. It's not, yeah, it's just, he knows. He knows about perception.
It's, Eric and I have kind of referred to what we call the inner smirk, where it's just, yeah, it's that kind of indescribable feeling of like, the person, you're with somebody who's just, they seem to know something that you don't, or know something about yourself that you don't know, and it does feel like you're being, there's some kind of power being expressed, but it's really, but it's like a passive power, like it's just by their action, it just kind of consciousness is raised or something like that, I don't, something kind of spooky like that. I know the feeling.
No, totally. And so I see that, I see him being able to influence and, you know, how has he gotten so big and so on. It's like, yeah, I mean, he's talented, but there's this X factor too, that I notice in certain folks. And having seen that documentary and getting a better gambit or a full exposure to how he interacted with people and his aims for his projects, it's like, yeah, okay, I get it now. I finally get it. I finally get Jodorowsky.
Yeah.
See that? I need to see it. I did see The Dance of Reality, though. I don't know if either of you saw that.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
Oh, I keep
You should check it out. Sorry, I keep unmuting myself.
Well, you gotta talk sometime, guy.
I know.
It's very challenging to have to go back and forth muting like that. I don't, you know, particularly enjoy that part of, you know, you're having a conversation. You want it to be natural. You know, you don't want to be fucking, okay, now I'm going to talk. Okay, now I'm not talking.
I have in mind. I think it'll be fun. But yeah, The Dance of Reality. Yeah, you should see that.
All right. Cool. Groovy. Down.
All right. Maybe we should wrap up. Alex, do you have are you guys doing another episode anytime soon, or you just did an Interstellar episode, right? So is that?
Yeah, we don't have anything planned for the moment. I'm not really sure when we will, but it'll be out there once we do. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun here.
Actually, I want to mention something to you really quick. Is it okay? Just like another minute? Dude, okay, so I'm tripping out on the two towers of, you know, Lord of the Rings, two towers, because I have this whole crazy thing with the Thos Vesica Pisces, where when you lay out the major arcana, you're basically forming an eye. You have iron, you have pe, you have an eye, and you have the mouth, you know, just this idea of the Vesica. And every time I'm fucking thinking about Lord of the Rings now, I'm thinking about the fact that you have, in Mordor, you have the third tower, is the eye of Sauron, right? Because you say there are two towers, but really there's three towers. Okay. And so in that same in the same way in masonry, you have the three pillars of Joachim and Boaz. You know, I mean, this is one of the tower. Okay, so one of the towers is in fucking where is the other tower? So one's in Mordor, and the other neither are in Mordor.
One of them is Isengard or Orthanc, where Saruman lives. And the other one is Barad-dûr, which is in Mordor, which is the one with the eye on it.
Okay, so it is two towers. There's no third fucking tower.
There might be a third tower. I honestly am not sure.
God,
I think there's just two.
It was required reading for me when I was in elementary school. But
it's so good. It's fucking brilliant.
I don't know how to communicate this, and it's very complex, and I'm not going to go into the whole thing. It's just when I'm looking at the Vesica laid out, I make a statement on the YouTube video that Patrick Sveck helped me make where I'm like, this eye could be viewed as a tower that's perpetually collapsing and being rebuilt, which is directly connected with the king kill, because Pei means mouth, which corresponds to the tower. Tsadi is not the star, because Tsadi, according to Crowley, is now the emperor. So you have the fish hook, which is Tsadi, corresponding to the king, essentially, and then the king connects to the tower through the mouth, because you have a fish hook goes through the mouth to get the catch, right? And so if you look at the, you know, the tower card, which is the destruction of the temple, you have the lightning flash literally hitting the crown, and the king and the queen falling out of the tower that's now on fire. And so it's just, in terms of Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all. I'm equating that there's these rings in tarot, and then there's Rota, it's the Rota wheel, but that there's an overarching circle that's actually ruling over the whole process. That's like people are getting hung up on the specifics and they can't back out of missing the whole thing, like Repo Man, you know? but yeah, you get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. When I think of Sauron in the Lord of the Rings, I always think of Saturn, which itself, if you look at Saturn from the top down, or maybe it's the bottom, I don't know, whichever pole has the hexagon thing on the top of it. You're right there. It's an eye, and the hexagon is like the pupil almost. And it's, of course, the Lord of the Rings. You have the all the rings of Saturn and Sauron and Saturn, and then you have Saruman, which is like Sauron incarnated as in man, sort of. And you know, that's what I always associate with that.
I need to be careful when I'm talking about Lord of the Rings at all, because I'm gonna have the fucking nerd herd throwing tomatoes at me.
Yeah,
it's gonna be like, fucking, we need to talk about Kevin up in here. I'm gonna get covered in tomato sauce. They're gonna be like, what the fuck are you talking about? It was required reading when I was in elementary school. And we had to go chapter by chapter and explain how it related to the Old Testament, or, you know, the New Testament. But
What kind of elementary did you go to?
I went to a really weird Christian school, and it wasn't, nice. That wasn't the curriculum. That was one teacher that was like, Lord of the Rings is very significant and I want my students to be familiar with it. And so there's this whole thing, but that was elementary school, you know, and like since then I've watched the fucking new movies or whatever, you know. But, I probably would get a lot of flack from the geek squad on that one, you know. I mean, I'm a geek myself, don't get me wrong. That's not my specialized area of geekdom, you know.
Yeah. It's mine at the moment, just because I'm reading. Because I just saw that recent Hobbit movie, which is terrible. And, I wanted to cleanse myself of that atrocity by reading the books, and it's working well so far.
Cool.
Yeah.
Real quick, and one more small thing before we sign off. So also in Lord of the Rings, you have the Nine Kings. So you have K-9, which is a small wink to Sirius, possibly, as well.
K-9, that's judgment. Hmm. If you say 9 plus 11, that's the judgment card.
Yep, that too.
I mean, and then it's the K-9 tooth, because Shin means K-9 tooth.
Yeah. And, you mentioned the fishhook, David, and then I was thinking, oh, fishhook Saturn. I'm forgetting where I read that, but those two things are linked. And then, of course, Alex brings up Saturn right after that. So, perfect timing as always. And, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. So it was nice talking to you guys.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Talk to you soon,
nice
Alex.
Nice talking to you. All right. I'll talk to you guys.
Have a good night, guys. All right. Peace. See you.
I'm sorry if anyone here is Catholic. I'm not sorry if you're offended. I'm actually sorry just the fact that you're Catholic. It's got to be one of the most ludicrous fucking beliefs ever. Like these vampire priests sink their twin fangs of guilt and sin into you as a child and suck your joy of life out of you the rest of your fucking existence. And I love watching the Pope bounce around in his little Pope-mobile. That's got to be hoot number one on my fucking CNN list. Just, I want a whole show of the Pope just bouncing around on that all-terrain Pope-mobile with the 3 feet of bulletproof plexiglass around him. Boy, there's faith in action. You see, you know he's really the spokesman for God, because only God's spokesman would need plexiglass bulletproof, don't you think? Don't y'all read that the same way?